Well, yesterday in the morning, Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, told reporters that the government is working to facilitate the return of ISIS bride Lisa Smith. Mr. Coveney said that the government owed Ms. Smith and her two-year-old daughter a duty of care. On the line now, Michael O'Toole, crime correspondent of the Irish Daily Star. Michael, good morning. Thanks for joining us. You're writing today that the government is actually considering sending the government jet to the Middle East to help bring her home.
Yeah, it's the Learjet 45. It's a seven-seater. And the irony is, of course, Sean, that then Private Smith would have worked on that jet as a flight attendant. 2008, famously, we found a photograph of her with the then Taoiseach Bertie Ahern as he was flying off to speak to the Congress in America in one of his most famous speeches. So she worked on that flight. So now they are... under active consideration that plane will be sent, but not to Syria. There won't be. I don't think it's very unlikely there's going to be any Rambo-style operation to go and rescue from Syria. What they're looking at this stage is getting her to a neighbouring country, whether that be Lebanon, Turkey, or perhaps even Iraq, and flying her out from there.
Well, I suppose the first priority would be to get her out of that camp where she is at the moment. It seems to be something bordering on prison setting. Now, how would that stage be achieved?
It would most likely have to be overland, probably by Syrian Kurdish forces. We know that it's the SDF who run a camp. It's the Raj camp in northeastern Syria, close to the Turkish border, where she and her young child are being held at the minute. But there was some speculation that perhaps the Army Ranger wing was going to get her. I just don't think there's any possibility of that happening. So it's going to be really by cooperation. So the plan would be to get her out, probably by overland, by route, where there is an Irish contingent. We know that the Irish UNIFIL soldiers are based there. Is about eight or ten hours drive from northeastern Syria. It's southwest of Syria, so that's a long drive. Could get over the border into Turkey or Iraq, but she is facing a long drive to get out of there, and it will have to be perhaps with the SDF forces helping.
And would the approach be done at government level or by government, or might perhaps the services or the help of an NGO, a non-governmental organisation, be used?
I think that's all in the mix, Sean. Really, I think the preparations and plans were only started to be looked at yesterday or the day before, so it is very, very early, and they are trying to work out various plans, so you know, whatever help they can get. I was speaking to military sources just when this blew up, maybe two or three weeks ago, and they talked about if there did have to be some sort of hard rescue operation, it would have to be with other forces, with the help, say, of the British or the Americans, to try and get her out. So it's a very, very fluid situation. It is a bit of a headache for the Defence Force to try and get her back.
And is this a Defence Forces, or would this be a Defence Forces operation, or might the Gardaí, or how would it be coordinated?
The Defence Force, obviously, they fly the government jets. They would be flying around. My latest information is there would probably be members of the Department of Foreign Affairs on board and guarded detectives from Special Branch, who look after Counterterrorism International, which looks after people who have been radicalised by Islamism and suspects there. So that would be what they're looking at. I don't think they're really looking at any military soldiers, shall we say, going on this flight. It's only a Learjet 45. It only carries seven people. So they have her and her son, so it's quite a limited number of people who can be on board.
Yeah, and what about the whole question of what happens when she is, if she is brought back? What would the plan be at that stage?
Look, she'll obviously be debriefed by military intelligence and Garda intelligence. It's a major problem for the Garda. They will be looking at to see if she has committed any offences. But I have to say, I don't necessarily know if she has. I don't know if there's any legislation under which she can't be charged. She's not under suspicion for being an ISIS fighter. She's under suspicion, I think she said this herself, that she married an ISIS fighter who was subsequently killed. So it's hard to see what offence at this remove she has committed or is suspected of committing. Well, she did fall in love with some ISIS fighter, really.
Yes, and she told a CNN reporter that she's living in a prison, she wants to go home, and she said that all the people here are not terrorists, I want to go home.
Yeah, from what I can see, having seen the reports, she is in a camp for families of ISIS fighters, so, you know, I think there will have to be some level of sympathy for her. She obviously got herself into a very, very sticky situation, but I don't think she's under any suspicion of having been involved in fighting for ISIS or any terrorism or anything like that.
Yeah, and what about the cost of such a venture if it is undertaken and does get the go-ahead from Cabinet?
It's the government jet costs around €3,750 per hour. So it could be there and back, could be a 12-hour flight, so anything up there, depending where they go. So Beirut is obviously closer than Iraq, but Beirut, Istanbul, Erbil in Kurdistan and Iraqi Kurdistan, I think it's about 12 hours return, so anything up to €45,000.
Yeah, I mean, the approach that Simon Coveney indicated yesterday, in total contrast to that being adopted by the British government, where they've stripped the young woman Shamima Begum of her citizenship. And of course, tragically, she has lost three babies, toddlers, and there seems to be absolutely no desire, quite the contrary, on their part to bring her back.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a level of humanity here. She obviously got herself into a really, really sticky situation, and she is an Irish citizen. She's from Dundalk, born and bred all her life, so it's not as if she... We know that there was one ISIS fighter who acquired Irish citizenship under questionable circumstances anyway. We know the Sunday World interviewed that man's wife, and she said that he effectively bought the marriage for €3,500 to get the passport. So I don't think there's no parallel there. I don't think they stack up at all. So, look, you know, she is entitled to consular assistance. She is an Irish citizen and an Irish person, and I suppose the government has to help her.
Okay, Michael O'Toole, crime correspondent with The Star. Thank you very much indeed for joining us now on the line. On the other line, former Justice Minister, former Defence Minister, Alan Shatter. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Sean.
Thanks for joining us. You've been writing in the Irish Independent today, and I don't think reading that would get much of a sense of sympathy on your part for the plight of Lisa Duffy and her daughter, you say, and I'm quoting here, some of the benign, sympathetic, uncritical coverage of her plight has been extraordinary.
Lisa Smith, yes, that is my view. I think, frankly, listening to Michael there is an example of an approach that's not appropriate and not correct. He references her as being someone deserving of sympathy, and she got herself into a sticky situation. I think we need to be realistic about this. Lisa Smith, when she travelled to Syria, reportedly either at the end of 2014 or early 2015, wasn't a young, non-worldly teenager who was taken over by something she was watching on the internet. She was a 33-year-old adult woman, retired member of the Defence Forces, having served in the Defence Forces for 10 years, and she had to know where she was going. She voluntarily, under no duress from anyone, travelled to Islamic State at a time when there was massive global media coverage to multiple beheadings that took place in the middle of 2014. Journalists were beheaded, aid workers were beheaded, celebratory videos of these appalling, atrocious events were put online by ISIS in the hope of recruiting people. They advertised their barbarity. There were many people who were being tortured at the time.
Yes, but I'm not so sure that there's any suggestion that she participated in or approved of these events.
Well, we don't know, Sean, what she was doing, and let's not get too misty-eyed about this. The first question that I need answered, and I think most people would require some answer to, is why would you voluntarily travel to live in a state newly established, engaged in the greatest type of barbarism invented, not only what I've already mentioned, but genocide of Yazidis, taking young Yazidi women into sexual slavery, doing a whole range of other appalling atrocities, which they celebrated and advertised. Now, why would anyone go to travel to live in a state of that nature? We don't know what she was doing. We're told that her husband was an admirer of ISIS and became a jihadi fighter. Her child reportedly is named after Rafa, which was the capital of the new Islamic State. And I'm just saying we should tread with caution.
Okay, but what do you think of Simon Coveney's announcement that the government is looking at ways to bring her home and the child.
I totally accept that she's an Irish citizen. The government has an obligation to bring her back to Ireland. I don't think this is a thing of enormous difficulty because she's held by the Kurds who took over the last bastion that ISIS had in Syria. I think they are anxious that some of the foreign nationals who are detained by them are taken back to their home countries. They don't want to retain responsibility for them. But my concern is that Lisa Smith is not a victim. My concern is that she's being portrayed in some sort of heroic terms, and my concern is that when she comes home, that she's going to become both a media celebrity and be approved of and celebrated by some members of the House of Eurocrats. Now, the true victim in all of this is her young, innocent 2-year-old daughter who knows nothing of the circumstances in which she was conceived and hopefully hasn't been permanently damaged by spending the first 2 years of her life living within the barbarism of Islamic State. But there are serious issues that we need to address. There's serious explanations she needs to give. There are security issues the state should be concerned about. And this should not be lost as if we are about to rescue someone who is some sort of a victim and who was perhaps deluded into visiting Syria. She was a 33-year-old adult and former member of the Defence Force.
Would you support the use of the government jet on this mission?
I acknowledge that the government have an obligation to bring her and her daughter home. Now, what happens thereafter is very complex, and I'm presuming the government would use whatever appropriate means there are to fly her home, and if there are security issues around her coming home, I've no particular concern. You have to remember what everyone references as the government jet. Basically, it's one of the planes that within our Air Corps, and it's one of the few that can engage in long-distance travel without stopovers. So, yeah, I've no particular issue around that.
Yeah, but I'm wondering why you say there is an obligation to bring her home. I mean, maybe an obligation to allow her home might be a different way of looking at it.
I think, frankly, the obligation to be more careful about it applies to the future welfare and well-being of her daughter. To some extent, she is the originator of her own difficulty. And she chose to only leave Islamic State and sees living within the barbarity of the ISIS regime as their final last bastion was about to be taken over by the Kurdish forces. So I personally don't believe, and I don't believe too many people in this country have too much sympathy for her. But she has a 2-year-old child. I presume she is the person the child is attached to. We must have concerns about the child's well-being and welfare. And quite clearly, the child should come home with her mother.
And under our current legislation, do you think there's any realistic prospect that she could face criminal charges upon her return?
Well, I think there's a very serious issue as to what she was doing when she went to Islamic State. She wasn't initially a mother, she wasn't initially pregnant, she was an adult who volunteered to go and live within Islamic State at a time when they were perpetrating enormous cruelty on the populations that they took over, and at a time when they were engaged in appalling atrocities, not just within the Middle East, but within Europe. We had hundreds of people dying in different parts of Europe, including closest to us in Manchester, as a result of atrocities perpetrated by ISIS. So I think there are serious issues as to what she was doing when she was living within Islamic State, what support she gave to the regime that was there, why she was there. I'm not going to pass any judgment of any description as to whether she may or may not be at risk of any criminal charges.
One other matter, because I know, and I refer to the fact that you're a former defence minister, I gather you've got concerns about the drop in numbers in the defence forces. How serious is the problem in your view?
I think, Sean, this problem is enormously serious. When I was Minister for Defence at the height of our economic and financial difficulties back in 2011, 2012, I had to fight a battle to maintain the strength of the Defence Forces, which goes across the Army, Navy and Air Corps at 9,500. And that was deemed to be the minimum numbers required both for our domestic security issues and to facilitate the Defence Forces engaging as they do so courageously and efficiently in UN or UN missions abroad. The numbers have now sunk to 8,300. And there's a series of very simple reasons why that has happened. At a time when we're in financial difficulties, the salaries within the Defence Forces, like in other parts of the public service, were low, but the Defence Force salaries traditionally were never generous. They're now so far out of sync that it's extraordinarily difficult to recruit new people to the Defence Forces. Those recruited find unexpectedly that they're in financial difficulties. Members of the Defence Forces at different levels, but particularly at the lower levels, where they have a spouse and family, have huge difficulties financially making ends meet. Some of them are dependent on additional assistance through social supports or social welfare. And I'm hugely concerned that the important role the Defence Forces play has been ignored and neglected. I think it's a major error that we don't have a senior minister at Cabinet who is simply responsible for the Defence Forces. At present, the Taoiseach officially is both Taoiseach and Minister of Defence, and there's a junior minister, Paul Keogh, who I know and who I would regard as a very well intended and committed individual, but he will have no weight at Cabinet.
But I mean, what's needed here isn't necessarily a minister, somebody of ministerial status at Cabinet. It's somebody with a checkbook, because the improving economy means that the army is less an attractive an option for people,
yes,
surely.
That's true, but we also need someone who has a commitment to the Defence Forces and sees them as being something more than a group of people to be used in ceremonial occasions or to be present with the public relations pictures. We're going to have the Defence Forces, as they always do on Easter Sunday, marching down the centre of O'Connell Street. And this is yet another occasion which the public come out for. There's great respect for our Defence Forces. We are using our UN engagements as one of the selling points as to why Ireland should get a seat on the UN Security Council in a couple of years' time. But while we are doing that, we're neglecting the essential needs of ensuring the Defence Forces have the manpower and woman power that they require. There are new and additional security issues that could arise in the border as a consequence of the chaos that is Brexit, and none of us know how that's going to end up. And I'm just hugely concerned. The financial circumstances of the Defence Forces are currently being examined, and a report is expected from the Public Service Pay Commission in the summer. But this has been going on too long.
Indeed.
And the numbers to which the Defence Forces have descended, 8,300, means that at this moment in time, with all the goodwill in the world, they are overstretched, and we are at risk,
Alan Shatter,
of not being able to engage in further UN missions.
Alan Shatter, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Former Defence Minister, former Minister for Justice there, and obviously former TD as well for Dublin South. Now I see Mr. Rees-Mogg, Jacob Rees-Mogg, the chair of the European Research Group, has been tweeting in the last hour or so saying the choice seems to be Mrs. May's deal or no Brexit. We'll be talking about all of that and more after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.